We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
New member of the Kansas City Chiefs, Mike Remmers, will join us coming up at 9:30. The new offensive lineman that the Chiefs have signed in free agency will join us coming up at 9:30. His favorite color is red. So
yeah, which is pretty cool.
I'm sure that's
a deep dive.
Directly led to his signing with the Chiefs.
Hey, I did my homework on Remmers yesterday.
Always wanted to wear red. So
I wonder if that ever factors in. Like if you know, we saw one guy last week say he flipped a coin to decide where he was going to sign. I wonder if it ever came down to you got two offers that are pretty much the same, but you're like, I like that uniform better. I think I'm going to go sign with the Chiefs.
I don't know if it comes down to the pros. Definitely doesn't in college.
Oh, college. It definitely does. Sure. Oh, yeah. Which uniforms look the best?
Yeah.
No doubt.
Don't like those colors or the shoe company they're with or whatever.
I'm a Nike guy. I can't play at that Adidas school or vice versa.
What? Okay. Yeah. To each their own. Mike Remmers will join us coming up at 9:30.
Ryan Monitor, ESPN, Rex Ryan is back. We don't know what he could be saying today.
Who's he going to call a turd today and then immediately apologize about it?
I don't know.
The best part about his bookshelf is he's got a shrine to himself back there. He's got a book he wrote, a picture of himself, and two footballs with his name on it.
What?
Yes.
Huh.
Oh, God.
Rex, I mean, is that frowned upon, though? Like, if I wrote a book, I would probably be proud of it. I'd put it in.
Yeah, no, not at all.
You want to sell more of that book?
What about foot fetishes? Is that what that one says?
You better put it on your bookshelf if you're one of these TV stand-up types.
God, how great would it be if Rex Ryan had just, like, a picture of his wife's feet on the bookshelf behind him?
His Mount Rushmore of feet, like the 4 feet that he loves in this world, right?
Like 8x10 glossies of feet.
Just the whole wall's lined with them.
And here we have the feet of Scarlett Johansson.
It's like at a restaurant where they hang pictures of famous people that have eaten there. He's just got like famous feet that have been in his home. That's Tom Hanks
here,
right there.
That is Buddy Ryan's feet.
Essential wrote pieces for each and every team chronicling the best and worst trade of the decade for each franchise.
Yeah.
Because we're into decade list now because
it's July.
This is the time we're into the portion of July is going to be crazy, hopefully, in terms of real sports.
So we need to get all this
April
stuff out of the
way.
April
is now July.
Right, April is the new July.
Just so we can get to it. I can't say I completely disagree with either one of their selections. Their best trade for the Royals made since 2010, the James Shields trade. What was known then as the James Shields trade.
Right, it's now been known as the Elliot Johnson trade.
No, not so much. But the James Shield, Wade Davis, and Elliot Johnson trade for the Tampa Bay Rays. For Will Myers, Mike Montgomery, Patrick Leonard, and Jake Odorizzi. That, to me, was the beat your chest, let's win, let's go. The jumpstart trade. Which I don't think gets enough credit for the stones it took to send off a top prospect. Because that was lampooned a little bit around baseball. Like we were in the coveted the next wave prospect type guy. And there was a lot of fears that Will Myers was going to go on to be something special. I wasn't rooting for him not to be. He's been okay. But at that point in time, there was a lot of criticism. Like, you're going to trade your franchise's best prospect away for... We didn't know Wade Davis was going to be the stud closer that he was, right? They still tried to turn him into a starting pitcher. Mm-hmm. James Shields had certainly some statistical impact, but more importantly, that was a culture shift impact type move. And then the others were just kind of pieces around it.
Yeah.
But I think the stones it took to deal Will Myers at that point in time shouldn't be understated.
The best way to go back and look at that trade is to get Dayton's book and read the chapter about how that trade went down. I'm not going to spoil it for you. It's a pretty remarkable way that trade went down. And I would encourage everybody, if you haven't read Dayton's book yet that he put out after the 2014 World Series and then obviously updated it after the 2015 World Series, go get a copy
addendum.
Of Dayton. Yeah, it had to have an addendum, right? Yeah. Go get Dayton Moore's book. Go read that book and especially read the chapter on that trade about James Shields and him coming over to the Kansas City Royals and how that trade went down. I think that is going to be one of, not with the Royals per se, but where Major League Baseball is going right now. That's going to be one of those last type of trades that we truly see like that, because general managers now today are so ingrained to statistics and to Twitter and to getting criticized online for trading prospects that a lot of general managers in baseball, the newbie general managers in baseball, the Harvard graduate general managers in baseball, they're afraid to go out there and make trades like that Dayton Moore made, the trading of a Will Myers. Teams are afraid and panicked to do that because they don't want to see on social media and in other places getting criticized for trading your prospects. Prospects, to me, are just like running backs. You know, churn and burn. Let's go. Let's make your team better. How are you going to find a way to make your team better? And moving on from prospects sometimes is something that you have to do. Will Myers has gone on to do some All-Star games, but he's now gone on to San Diego. The Royals wouldn't have won a World Series if they kept Will Myers here in Kansas City. But I'll debate the merit of that trade. And I talked to somebody yesterday about this, and I got their opinion on it as well to make sure that I was on the right track, that I think the Zach Greinke trade was bigger than that trade for the Kansas City Royals, because the Zach Greinke trade really set everything
up. It wouldn't fall into this criteria.
Why?
Wasn't it 2011 on or 2010 on?
It was this decade.
Wasn't it 2010?
It was after the 2010 season. I think it was like January of 11, if I'm not mistaken.
It was January of 2010. It was like the right in that wintertime. It was right after the
winter. That's what I was wondering, if this didn't fall into their window. Because I think the Greinke one, by far.
Yeah.
That might be the best trade they've – and that took stones, too.
Well, it did.
Walking away from Zach Greinke at that point in time. But that laid the foundation for your core group of
– I mean,
of,
I don't –
of
because
of Royals
if,
for a World
if you
Series.
Don't get if you don't trade Greinke, you don't get Odorizzi, who becomes a big part of that trade to get James Shields back here, Elliot Johnson, and Wade Davis here. So that was the one for me that set up everything. And maybe if it doesn't fall in their criteria, then I'm wrong on that one, and that's fine. But I think if you're looking at the biggest trades made over the last 10 years, I mean, to me, that Zach Greinke trade
I would
still
agree.
Falls into
I would agree.
Category.
I just didn't feel like that it fell within their window.
I mean, I don't hate either of the trades at the best over the last decade either, though. Like, I can understand the merit of both of them, but I think when you talk about a day-in, day-out, like, impact, I personally think that Alcides Escobar, Lorenzo Cain had a bigger day-in, day-in impact than Wade Davis and James Shields.
I agree with that, Ryan. I absolutely 100%.
And it's not to take anything away from Ryan. Like, I know Wade Davis was an integral piece in us getting a World Series title. I mean,
so was Lorenzo Cain.
But I would contend that Alcides Escobar, Lorenzo Cain were more integral than James Shields, Wade Davis. Like, I mean, James Shields, by and large, did not give you, statistically speaking, what you thought you were going to get when you traded for him. I mean, Wade Davis was the real win in that trade. Like, we all can admit that going and looking back at it. Now, I think that the biggest part of why I would say maybe it was a little more impactful for that Davis trade was, like, that was the first time that the Royals, at least in my memory, could say, you know what? Prospects be damned, we're going for it. Like, we're going to do this, and this is what we're going to do. And I think it really does show you, like, the hit-or-miss nature of just sports in general. Like, we hear it all the time about, like, coaches going for it on fourth down or you know, making gutsy calls. Like, if you get it wrong, you're a moron. If you get it right, you're a genius. And, like, that trade was really, like, the impetus of, like, a two-year window where, like, Dayton Moore couldn't do any wrong. Like, everything he touched turned to gold. Like, he was bringing in guys that were on scrap heaps. He was finding great free agent deals. Kendrys Morales was signed over those times. Like everything
Chris
he touched,
Young was huge.
Yeah, I mean everything he touched. He traded Jonathan Sanchez for Jeremy Guthrie.
Yeah, that's a trade that man.
And so, like, you know, over that 2-year stretch, it just shows you the hit or miss nature of what sports is and how, like, how you can be so right or you can be so incredibly wrong. Because I think if a few things don't go your way, or hell, even if you don't make a postseason push, like, that's considered a complete bust, right?
Right. Like, no doubt. Like, if the Royals don't get to the playoffs, everybody's looking back at the James Shields trade and go, you gave up Will Myers and you finished in third place. That wasn't worth it. You probably would have made the playoffs with Will Myers. And I'm here
or
to tell you they're not going to make the playoffs with
Will
Myers. Or
at the time they traded Zach Greinke.
Right.
How many teams trade an ace and have it really work out for them?
Right. It really doesn't happen all that often.
Right.
I mean, it's
and
it's hard.
I was
yeah.
fully on board with it at the time. He wasn't pulling on the rope.
Right.
He wasn't there to be part. He was beyond where the Royals were at that point in time, was fully on board with that trade, but it still takes some stones to pull that trade with him at that particular time, just like it did with, again, parting with your top prospect, Will Myers.
No doubt.
Those are make or break ones for somebody's probably tenure,
yeah,
right?
No question. If those trades don't work out, Dayton Moore's not here right now. They'll readily admit that. I've talked to many people, you know, throughout the organization. If those trades don't work out, we're not here anymore. We're not running this organization now. But when you look at the way that they pulled off that Greinke trade and who they got back in return, tip your cap to Ned Yost, because he was part of that Milwaukee Brewers organization and he had the inside information on those guys that you can't get from just sending your scouts to a game and watching these guys. Ned Yost knew the background, and Ned Yost, you know, signed off on that trade. And without Ned here, we don't do that trade probably, and who knows what the future is for the Royals.
They get right and seemingly do it quick. Next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
Cal Ripken joined Twitter and the world freaked out. Desperate times call for desperate measures, apparently. Quarantine time meant Cal Ripken got on Twitter, Bob. I don't know if you realize that.
Oh, but I didn't know he got on Twitter. No.
Yeah, that was.
I didn't know he wasn't on Twitter.
Yeah, apparently I didn't know he wasn't on it either until he got on it. And then,
he has a team tweeting for him, too.
Yeah, now he's everywhere, including on ESPN.
How many days in a row will he tweet? Will he set a record?
I don't know. He only had one tweet yesterday. I don't know if he's actually added.
Hi,
to that
I'm since. On Twitter. Was that his first?
It really was. It really was.
Hi, Twitter. Hello. I guess I'm on.
Hello, Twitter.
How
world.
Does this work? You know,
it's your boy Cal Ripken.
I'm just saying. Yeah.
Hi,
Twitter world. It's Cal Ripken here.
But then he dropped by ESPN to discuss the potential of baseball getting back.
My first reaction was, "This is great. They're really working hard to try to bring baseball back," and I was happy about that. Now, if you look at the logistics and trying to figure out all the hurdles and the challenges that they're going to have to go through, you can start to pick apart those things and start to figure. But I was left with, hey, isn't this wonderful that we're trying to bring it back? Because I personally believe that baseball is magical. And I think baseball does have that ability to repair and to help and heal. And I think there's a role here to play when we come out of this situation we're in now. None of us have experienced anything like this. But I'm really looking forward to getting back to some sense of normalcy. And normalcy to me is, you know, having those guys out in the field playing baseball.
Ripken also discussing the Ironman streak course, which is being discussed now, and that Whit Merrifield is now the current leader. Is that right?
Yeah, like they ran the game last night on ESPN, the Ironman game where he broke the streak. And so now they're looking at Ironman in baseball right now. Whit Merrifield is the current leader with 247 consecutive games
played. I was
not
aware of that.
He's 2,385 games behind Cal Ripken Jr.
So they need to get back to playing.
Tweeting a video or a photo of he and his dog watching the Ironman game, the record-breaking Ironman game.
Oh, well,
so he's been active on Twitter. Here's the confusing thing. He's sitting in his living room. He's right in the middle, like on the rug. He's seated on the floor. There is like four perfectly acceptable seats around him, and yet he is seated on the floor. I don't know.
Posing for a picture, Ryan. He was staging the picture.
No, he's watching. He's not even looking at the photo. Like he's
no,
he's,
I know.
He's looking
they,
at
you
the
can
TV.
Stage a picture with not looking at it. You can say, I'm going to sit here in front of the TV, get me watching the game from behind.
I mean, looks like he has a labradoodle. I didn't see that coming.
You know, a stage photo. Now, for Whit Merrifield being there as the current
doodle.
Iron Man is pretty cool. But for me, the real upset of all of this is, do you know off the top of your head which player has the fifth longest streak in Major League Baseball?
Well, if I knew one through four, I just didn't know five.
Right. I wish you would have asked three. I definitely had three.
You knew
Darn,
three,
I had
right?
the answer for three.
This is interesting. Jorge Soler has the fifth longest active streak right now in Major League Baseball for consecutive games played at 162. He played every single game last season for the Kansas City Royals. And why I find that to be so special and so interesting is because Jorge Soler was one of those guys that we had the wait till he's healthy, let's see what he can do mantra around him. Jorge Soler was healthy. He hit close to 50 home runs last year, and we saw what Jorge Soler can do healthy. It's almost to me like Lorenzo Cain version 2.0. Once Lorenzo Cain remained healthy and stayed healthy, that guy went on a tear, and that guy became one of the best players in Royals history. Jorge Soler now has had a full season of not being injured, and look what a whole season of Jorge Soler did. That guy became one of the best power hitters in Major League Baseball, and now I'm excited to watch Jorge Soler move forward, staying healthy, because he's done a really good job in what he needs to do when he stays healthy. And that was the big caveat about Jorge Soler. And last season he was healthy and he was one of the best power hitters in the game.
So two of the five longest streaks are Royals.
Yeah,
right,
absolutely. Wow. Yeah. We'll have Mike Matheny, I believe, tomorrow at some point on the show. And I'm going to ask him, do you ever plan on taking these guys out of the lineup? Because if you do, you're ruining streaks here, man. We're closing in on Cal Ripken.
Need to get back to baseball so that Witt can catch Cal Ripken.
I've heard conspiracy theorists talk about how Ripken's streak was propped up anyway, so it wouldn't shock you.
Yeah.
Baseball continuing to prop up Cal Ripken's streak.
Well, I mean, I think it's the most unbreakable record in sports. I don't think anybody
really?
Is going to even come close. Yeah.
I feel like DiMaggio's hit record, because what is that, like 56?
56, yeah.
Yeah, that feels pretty unbreakable. Pete Rose's hit total also feels somewhat unbreakable. Well, it's just longevity of careers that I don't think are going to be the case. I think baseball records are more likely than football records to not fall. Football records seem to fall on a pretty regular basis because they're adapting and changing the game, whereas baseball staying pretty stagnant on it. Like, I mean, it is easier to see these records start to fall. I mean, I don't know how long Jorge Soler's Royals home run record will stand. Like, it took forever to break Balboni's, and then it took, what, like a year and a half to break Moose's?
Hey, if they're playing in spring training ballparks, Jorge Soler may launch 60. You know, he may take advantage of the thin air down there in Arizona and just blast away. But
Cy Young wins likely never.
Cy Young wins. Yeah, that probably won't get passed.
Ricky Henderson's stolen base record. I mean, he's got like 1,400 and something. The next closest
guy's total.
Yeah, the next closest guy's got like 900.
Yeah,
nobody's breaking that record.
But I think the hit record, like, of all of them, like, you could see Mike Trout. Like, you wouldn't be surprised if Mike Trout, you know, broke the consecutive game hitting streak, I don't think, because of how good he is. Just the ability to stay healthy and to not miss a game for 2,100, whatever the hell number of games it was for Cal, 2,131 was the record that he broke. To be able to stay healthy and not get injured or need a day off or be in a slump and to play that kind of streak, that is remarkable to me. That takes more than just going out there and doing your job. That takes being able to stay healthy, and that's something a lot of us can't control.
Well, load management wasn't a thing.
Load management wasn't a thing back then.
For reference,
you know, worried about scheduling days off now in baseball is a thing.
Yep.
So you'd have to have somebody kind of not be in that mode. Now I could see that happening. I was thinking back to, this was our first our Chiefs, one of the Chiefs rewatches were, no, I guess it was the Mahomes first start. Yeah, the Mahomes first start in Denver that we rewatched. And all the backups were in except for Mitchell Schwartz.
Right. Because of that consecutive snap
right.
streak, yeah.
So, I mean, it could take someone like that who's just like, I'm playing, and I'm going to continue to play to in baseball to have that type of mentality.
What number is that, though? I mean, what's a 247? Do you get to 500 and then you start thinking about that? Like, where do you even get to where that
you
becomes
a quarter
like,
of the way there and start thinking about it? No, that's not it.
Right. No.
You've got to be like three quarters of the way there, like 1,500 games.
Does it have to be like...
Yeah, then we'll start having the conversation. Like, I've always thought that the most impressive part about a streak like that isn't necessarily the health aspect of it, although that is very impressive. The other impressive part is that you're playing at a premium position, and you have to play well enough to continue to be in the lineup. Like,
that too.
That's the most impressive part about it. It's not And again, like the health aspect is certainly impressive, but like the fact that you have to produce at a level that is conducive to you being an everyday starter at that position, which by the way is a premium position in baseball, like that's pretty impressive to me. So,
yeah, that's true. Like he didn't DH for the last 5 years.
Frame of reference for Whit Merrifield chasing Pete Rose, by the way. Pete Rose hit a total was 4,256. Whit Merrifield has 655. So
got a ways to go.
He's got a little bit of ways to go. Got a late start on it, but he's going.
Rewatching the Chiefs game, our homework assignment from yesterday was the Chiefs win at Atlanta, 29-28, week 13, 2016, the Eric Berry pick two game, as it's known. But one of the things that stood out to me from our homework assignment was, man, they get after stuff quick. And from 2016 to now, there was Chris Jones on that defense, and that was it.
Yeah.
That's it.
The only guy that's back.
The only guy that's a name that's still there. Now, offense had a few more pieces, but it was early Tyreek Hill that he was still, quote-unquote, a gimmick. Travis Kelce was kind of Travis Kelce.
He was really good in this game.
He was kind of Travis Kelce in that particular game. But
maybe more impactful then than he is now because he was truly the only guy that Alex Smith could rely on.
You had to ride it.
Yeah.
Right? He was your main pass-catching weapon in this game. They didn't have Jeremy Maclin. He was not playing in this particular game. But I thought about on the defensive side of things and how quickly things turn in the NFL, but also turn when you need it to turn if you're doing it right.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs got away from what wasn't working. And they got away from it quick. And I think that that's...
Some would debate you on that.
Some would debate me on... Yes, I know. When they got rid of the defensive coordinator, may have felt like that was 1 year. But that's relatively still quick. That you addressed a problem and you moved from it, and then it paid dividends.
Especially
right
being in the AFC Championship game. You don't normally fire your entire defensive staff after going that bold. Far. Being in a place where the Chiefs really had never been before, and that was hosting an AFC Championship
game. I think most teams would probably err on the side of putting it back together.
You'd say, yeah, you know, we're that close. We're all right.
We can make a move here, make a move there. They had a massive revamping of their defense, and I'll say they did it from 2016 as well. As I mentioned, Chris Jones was the only guy, and they had some pretty good parts of that defense, but it wasn't collectively churning up results. You had Eric Berry, Justin Houston, Tamba Ali, D. Ford, Marcus Peters.
A lot of good names, but
Derek
not a lot
Johnson.
Of good production.
Derek Johnson. Yeah. I mean, that's those are some. You're in better shape now.
No question.
You're in better shape now overall as a defense, and they realize that, and they made those moves. NFL turns over quick. I get it, but I think what I've noticed in some of our rewatches is they got after some stuff and weren't afraid to make those moves to turn something over relatively quick.
And in 2 years, the Kansas City Chiefs changed their starting quarterback, fired their entire defensive staff, and brought in all new defensive players, and won a Super Bowl. They did what now?
Mm-hmm.
They changed their starting quarterback and basically blew up their defense, and in the span of 2 years went from pretty good to winning a Super Bowl. That's remarkable.
Man, they got to do a better job. Not talking about the Chiefs. Just they. Next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
Boy, some teams are just having a tough time with this. The draft coming up in just a couple of weeks.
It really is a good reflection if you're an owner to see if you have competent people employed in
your
organization.
Or if there's panic. Or panic has set in.
Yeah.
I assume everyone's just going to have their teenage children help them.
Not a terrible idea.
It's not a bad idea at all.
I'm sure the hit rate would be about the same.
Yeah.
For some of these teams.
Oh, you're talking with technology or with the picks?
With the technology, not the...
I thought you were going to have your kid make the pick.
That could also work, too. No,
I think you're probably right. The hit rate would probably be about the same.
Close. New York Daily News reporting that Steelers general manager Kevin Colbert suggested that each team in the NFL should be given 3 extra draft picks in 2020 to help with the challenges of the coronavirus outbreak. According to the report, Colbert told league officials his idea during a conference call. He believes teams could make more mistakes with the absence of person-to-person meetings, pro days, and private workouts. And so he was suggesting moving to a 10-round draft.
Right, which is absolutely ridiculous. And if I'm the owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers, I'm questioning whether or not Kevin Colbert is the right guy for me as the general manager of my organization, because I'm looking at him right now, already 2 weeks out, making excuses that because of the coronavirus, we're probably not going to have a good draft and we need to go out there and add extra rounds onto that draft to basically give us a little pad. If I'm an owner of an NFL team right now, I think this corona thing is a very good situation. And to make the best of it for me, I'm evaluating the way that my guys are doing business right now.
How you handle an unprecedented, unplanned for crisis.
Right, because as a leader of an organization, which is what a general manager is, you have to be able to manage and handle crisis and, you know, do things differently, adjust on the fly, change the way you would normally do things. And the general managers that you don't hear a peep out of and the ones that aren't saying anything, have you heard Brett Veach come out here and complain about, you know, having the draft at home or having extra rounds added to the draft or complaining they may not get a good pick because of the coronavirus? No, you're not hearing that out of guys like that. And if you're hearing it out of guys like that and they're saying things like that, I, as an owner, have to question, wow, do I have the right guy in charge? Because in a time of crisis, you need good leaders. You need great leaders. You need people leading your organization and everybody else that's around you. Like, this general manager has to be leading his scouts. He has to be leading his personnel guys. He has to be leading maybe his head coach and the assistant coaches through all of this. And if you're out here making excuses and finding ways to, you know, make the draft longer because you don't feel like you have the proper work that's put in, then you weren't prepared for the draft anyway. And, you know, we heard Scott Pioli earlier in the week. We heard Amy Trask, former CEO of the Raiders, earlier in the show. Both people that were high-level executives in NFL organizations basically say the same thing. Quit making excuses and do your job. And you're not hearing, you know, the Patriots complain. You're not hearing the Chiefs complain. You're not hearing Seattle complain. Man, if my general manager's out here complaining right now and I'm the owner of a franchise, I am seriously evaluating his status with my organization after this season.
Adam Schefter of ESPN on NFL concerns over the draft.
Coaches want to be with GMs, and GMs want to be with the pro personnel directors, and the pro personnel directors want to be with the college scouting directors, and these teams are used to having great communication. Now, you can do it through teleconferencing, but there are already teams worried about having their Zoom teleconference hacked in by another team. That's been a question that's been raised right now. There are issues where other teams have said it's not fair that Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones in the same family get to be together in the same home on the draft day. And so I think there are going to be more teams that raise more issues here, and this is where it's at right now. And I think some teams have also wondered why the league keeps making rulings rather than saying, let's just sit back and see where we are before we come up with something. Here's where we are today. This is what we're planning. But we're open to other ideas, and we'll see what develops as the draft draws closer.
Why is Adam Schefter so mad at the fact that the draft is happening and so defensive for a lot of these things that are going around in the NFL? Because his sources are upset about that. Using Jerry and Stephen Jones as an example is a bad example to use as well. When was the last time the Dallas Cowboys were relevant on the field? I mean,
but
on.
Also, just because they're father and son, they don't live in the same household,
right?
So
yeah,
they
unless Stephen lives in the guest house.
Maybe he's on the same property. I don't know, yeah. But that would be a question I would raise. Like, wait a minute, they're no closer than having a coach and a GM who aren't in the same family come and hang out for a day and social distance.
Yeah.
It's like no different,
I mean,
really.
You're seeing families all around plan virtual Easters to have together, even though they live in the same communities,
so
right?
I understand that complaint if you're in our team. Like, wait a minute here. If those guys could be in the same room, we could probably be in the same room too. This is ridiculous. But all the weird stuff you're worried about right now, aren't you worried about who you're going to pick?
Right. But they're laying in the excuses, so when their picks fail, they go, well, we had corona.
Right. Didn't you do all the homework? If you read Peter King's column this week, he did a piece with the Colts, and they allowed him to interview, like, different people from different, you know, the GM, the coach, whatever. And GM Chris Ballard was like, yeah, we basically had everything in place in February.
That's right, because they're a legit organization.
Yeah. Everything was in place in February. We were just kind of fine-tuning. Yeah, we still have meetings, and we were still doing whatever, but, you know. Most of the legwork was done.
If again, as you used the example from college, if you're cramming for that test the night before, you're lost already. It's over. Don't bother. Don't waste your time. And if you're a GM right now or a player personnel department or let's use an NFL organization and you're still cramming for the draft, well, then you haven't done your job leading up to where we are right now. And again, drafting from home, working from home, yeah, you don't have that face-to-face contact. you can get the exact same stuff done. You don't need to be in the office to put your draft board together, okay? You can do that from the comfort of your basement and the comfort of your man cave at home. You can make the adjustments. Everybody can make the adjustments. And if you're not willing and you're not doing that and making those adjustments, you're setting yourself up for failure, and you're trying to use the coronavirus as a built-in excuse for you not doing your job when you should have been doing your job.
We actually appreciate a quote coming out of Cincinnati, of all places. Bengals coach Zach Taylor, quote, really the number one evaluation tool is always the regular season tape, especially with quarterbacks.
Wait, I'm sorry, what did he say?
Their number one evaluation tool is the regular season tape.
Wow.
Hear, hear, yay! What have we been saying forever? Like, games
watch the
matter.
Game.
We watched all that as much as we could with all the quarterbacks that are options there. Again, it's just one box you don't get to check off. But I think we're comfortable making any decision that we make without having seen all of these guys throw live.
What good does it do to line a guy up against nobody on field turf in a bubble throwing to a wide receiver that's a buddy of his? That's legit Uncle Rico stuff. You don't need to see that stuff to determine whether or not a kid can play. And I know we mock the Bengals a lot, and they're a pretty bad organization generally, but that's one of the best quotes that I've seen from not just right now, but throughout the whole draft process. What coaches are doing right now and organizations are doing right now is they're looking around going, do we really need these pro days? Like, was that a bunch of fat we could trim off and save some money? I would imagine you're going to see going forward, you're going to see organizations go, do we really need to take the private jet to Oklahoma to watch a guy throw against air?
Text line making a good point as
pro
well.
Days.
And I've kind of thought this as well, like, 913 saying this may be the most successful draft in history, not as much overthinking. I mean, I've often fallen back on the study long, study wrong philosophy as well. But I think that especially rings true in the NFL draft. It seems to be the one that gets dissected and broken down and talked about more than any of the drafts in any of the professional sports. So I am curious to see how, like, the lack of overthinking and just, not trying to be the smartest guy in the room, really focusing on what your team needs are, what your team goals are. Like, I'm curious to see how this alters the way the teams approach the drafts in the future, because who knows, maybe teams do have better drafts. Maybe they feel like there wasn't so much like diving into the numbers and they had to rely on what they used to rely on, which was the eye test and tape and seeing the guy actually perform in the sport that he's trying to get drafted in. So I am curious to see if it does alter some of the approaches that teams take going forward.
Now, I think interviews with players are positive. I think you want, especially those higher draft picks, you want to sit down and look them in the eye.
Sure.
And get those answers. That's fine. You also want to check it with coaches, but you can do all that remotely anyway.
Yeah, you don't need to be there for
that. I always felt like pro days were more of an advertiser for the colleges.
Yeah. Oh, we're here at Oklahoma today, and there's some dude from ESPN
and
the OU
there. Better. Oh, look at all our players we're putting to the pros. I felt like it was a better advertisement from them than it was maybe usefulness for pro teams.
Look at all these scouts that showed up to watch our players. Yeah, you're right, Josh. I never really even thought about that. That's a great recruiting tool for colleges more than it is for what the NFL is getting out of it. And if I'm an owner again of a team, and the draft goes fine, and I look back and I go, do we really need to spend money to send you to Oregon? No? Okay. We're not doing it then.
Yeah. The rewatch brings out Fesco's drum. He'll explain next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.